It's Wednesday, September 7th, and this is VOA's International Edition. I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. Hello and welcome. Coming up, President Obama reaffirms U.S. commitment to the Asia-Pacific region.
He's clearly trying to tell the United States it's only time before I can target U.S. territories.
Strong condemnation of North Korea's missile launches. Also ahead, the latest developments in missions to the final frontier and new music from a popular DJ. It's all on today's International Edition. President Barack Obama has reassured nations in the Asia-Pacific region that the U.S. strategic rebalance will endure for the long term because it reflects fundamental national interests. In a speech in Vientiane, Laos on Tuesday, Mr. Obama said there is widespread recognition in the United States that the Asia-Pacific region will become even more important in the century ahead, both to America and to the world. VOA White House correspondent Mary Alice Salinas is traveling with the president and spoke with us a short time ago to explain the rebalance strategy.
He said, make no mistake about it, this is in our nation's interest to engage with countries in this region. This is where the population is growing, is expanding, what holds tremendous promise, also a lot of security issues that the U.S. needs to become involved in, engaged with countries in this region. And so he's working, he said, throughout his administration, he has been working, I should say, throughout his administration to build ties so that the U.S. is part of this process. And he said, the U.S. is a Pacific nation, and we are here. We're here to stay. We're committed, and you can count on us. He literally told people you can count on America.
Mary Alice Salinas also told us that the White House strategy is aimed to serve as a counterweight to China's rising influence and power in the region.
It's definitely been more allied with China, and this is the Communist Party leading here, and elected a new president here. And the president acknowledged, look, we've had a complicated and difficult past, but that doesn't mean we can't work together. And so, White House officials say this is part of this administration's policy of reaching out to countries with whom we have had tense relations or no relations in the case of Cuba, if you look at it, and start to build ties. But there is no question that Laos is definitely one of those, it's not squarely allied with the West or the U.S. I mean, definitely. But also, analysts tell me that Laos is also seeking a little bit more independence. They don't want to be so connected to China that there is no other way either. So the U.S. has seen that kind of situation in the country as an opening for some sort of dialogue, maybe the beginning of some kind of opening up.
With fewer than 5 months left in office, Mr. Obama said the United States is more deeply engaged in the Asia-Pacific region than it has been in decades. However, the president also acknowledged the Trans-Pacific Partnership deal, the economic pillar of his rebalance strategy, is in trouble at home. The massive trade deal signed by 12 Pacific Rim nations must still be ratified by the United States Congress. It's time now for us to check out what's buzzing online. International Edition's social media reporter, G. Abby Lee, is right here in Studio 22 for that. Hi, G.
Hi, Jim.
Well, what are people saying about President Obama's visit to Laos?
Well, as you can imagine, the big story on social media about Mr. Obama's trip is that he pledged $90 million to Laos to clear unexploded bombs. And like you told me before the show, people who play Pokemon Go are also falling victim to the unexploded bombs, mm-hmm. because they are, you know, roaming around the country to play the game to places where they normally wouldn't go to.
Yeah.
And the trending hashtag for this topic is hashtag Obama in Laos.
Mm. Well, unexpected consequences there. Did mm-hmm. the president tweet about his visit?
You bet. He tweeted this Monday. Sabaydi Laos. Honored to be the first U.S. president to visit Laos and to begin a new partnership between our countries. More than 20,000 people liked that tweet.
Well, and tomorrow, we understand, switching topics, it's a very exciting day for Apple fans. Mm-hmm. Not the kind you eat.
No, not really.
Tell us
the
about
kind
it.
You actually use with your hands. Electronics and computer giant Apple is set to release iPhone 7 Wednesday, And there are some of the things that, and these are some of the things that people on social media are expecting about tomorrow's reveal. The new model will not have a headphone jack, and it will be at least water resistant, if not waterproof altogether. What do you think about the no headphone jack issue?
What? I didn't have my headphone plugged in. I don't know. A lot of people like their music. It may be an interesting development.
Yeah, some people are saying that it's a rather arrogant move on the part of Apple, and I feel like you are kind of siding with that sentiment. But other people argue that no, that's the way it will be in the future. One Twitter user wrote that no headphone jack is a new no physical keyboard. He argued Apple competitors will laugh and then advertise their new tech and eventually adopt the new technology.
Well, it has happened in the past.
Mm-hmm.
What else happens to be trending?
Now, this one is from France. Sadly, the world's first person to undergo a face transplant died at the age of 49. The patient had the surgery back in 2005, and since then, more than 20 face transplants have been completed around the world. That's all from me today.
Well, some sad news, but she will be remembered for changing the lives of those who had to undergo similar surgeries by being the first. Thanks for that wrap-up, G.
Mm-hmm.
And you can find us both on Twitter at VOA Stevenson and at G Abby Lee. Among the top stories that are trending in Asia, Afghan forces kill three gunmen in deadly siege. G20 aims to crack down on terror financing. President Obama tackles painful topics in Laos. Myanmar's Aung San Suu Kyi is to visit the United States next week. Philippine president expresses regret for vulgar comment about Obama. You'll find expanded coverage of these stories and much more at the voanews.com website. And also, if you have a smartphone, on our VOA mobile app. This is International Edition. VOA's International Edition continues. The UN Security Council has swiftly and strongly condemned North Korea's latest ballistic missile launches and threatened to take further significant measures if necessary. The 15-nation council agreed on the statement Tuesday, just hours after it met in emergency session, and it unanimously said Pyongyang's launches on Monday of three Nodong missiles that traveled 1,000 kilometers before landing in Japan's air defense identification zone were a grave violation of the Democratic People's Republic of Korea's international obligations under a series of Security Council resolutions. Leader Kim Jong-un has hailed them as perfect and urged continued development of the North's missile and nuclear programs. Those launches coincided with the end of the summit of the group of 20 largest economies in China. RAND Corporation analyst Bruce Bennett tells VOA's Victor Beatty the North has launched more missiles this year than in any previous year, and he was asked about what might be behind it.
First of all, Kim Jong-un is offended by not being invited to the G20. After all, he is a great nuclear power now. To us, that sounds ironic, but to him, I think he believes that now that he has nuclear weapons, he should be treated as a peer of China and the United States. So I think that was a part of it. I think a part is that he finds President Park's justification of acquisition of the THAAD missile defense system to be offensive. He doesn't want China to allow that to happen. So he's trying to make the point that if we push too hard on THAAD, that maybe he'll decide to launch some missiles. Well, that's exactly why you want THAAD in South Korea. He's just made a clear case for deployment of THAAD. In this kind of case, he may have missed his intended message there. And I think his final message is with regard to the U.S. I mean, he's clearly trying to tell the United States, it's only time before I can target U.S. territories. You guys need to make a peace treaty with me and get out of Korea.
These three missiles flew about 1,000 kilometers, hitting Japan's air defense identification zone. Japan saying this is a grave threat to our nation's security. The U.S. again calling it reckless. There's going to be a U.N. Security Council meeting. Anything new going to come out of that?
Well, it's really hard to tell if anything new is going to come out. Actually, given the range that they fired to, I suspect it actually wound, the missiles actually landed in the Japanese exclusive economic zone as well, which had been a concern before. I think, though, what the countries are learning is that there's no major activity going on by the great powers to rein in North Korea, and the more we complain, the more North Korea is prone to be launching missiles. So maybe Japan just decided not to make as big a deal about it this time, though I imagine when the UN meets, they will. The world's really got to decide, is it okay for North Korea to really be preparing to attack its neighboring countries with missiles and nuclear weapons? And if not, what is it we're prepared to do? Economic sanctions isn't going to do the job, especially if China doesn't enforce them. China's trade with North Korea in June was actually up almost 10% from last year. That doesn't sound like they're doing much on the sanctions that they agreed to in March.
Bruce Bennett said China's reluctant path to put too much pressure on its neighbor, fearing North Korea will collapse, is a sign that it believes the country is unstable. And he says that will only push the North Korean regime to do more testing, which he adds is becoming more reliable. Well, the U.S. rocket launching company SpaceX says it's too soon to declare when it will resume its launch program that it suspended after a very dramatic loss of a rocket last week. A SpaceX rocket blew up during a pre-launch ground test on Thursday at Cape Canaveral in Florida. It destroyed a Facebook communications satellite that was meant to carry it into Earth orbit. SpaceX also has ambitions to send people into space, a mission that was one of the topics discussed in this week's space-themed hashtag VOA TV show. Host Michael Lippin is with me right here in the studio. Michael, what did you learn about the impact of that destroyed rocket?
Hi, Jim. Thanks for having me. Well, that rocket failure, which was the second for SpaceX in the past 2 years, could delay other rocket launches that SpaceX has planned for the coming years, including launches of U.S. astronauts. My co-host Andrew Polchevsky and I spoke to two planetary scientists about that possibility. One of them is the director of the Mars Institute, Pascal Lee, who joined us via Skype from Mountain View, California. The other who joined us in the studio is David Grinspoon of the Planetary Science Institute. I asked Grinspoon what he makes of that SpaceX rocket loss.
Of course it's a setback, and when something like that happens, all of us in the space business are kind of horrified because, you know, you can picture it possibly happening to your own experiment. And, you know, when we launch things into space and to study the universe or do the other things we do up there, that's a moment of vulnerability, the moment of launch. It's frightening. And you know, you can never take a launch for granted. And that's a reminder of that. So it's awful. In the long run, how big a setback is it for SpaceX or in general for the commercialization of space? I would say ultimately not that big. I mean, it's a terrible loss for this particular project, but
What gives you optimism about it?
Well, you have to build into your plans that you're going to lose some spacecraft. I mean, this is rocket science, sorry. and you know, there's no sure thing. And if you had a business plan that said we are going to have 0% failure, we're never going to have a launch accident, invest in my company, nobody should invest in that company. You know, you should say, we're going to do everything we can to avoid this. It's going to happen sometimes, and that's built into the plan. We're going to be okay. So I think they definitely will be okay, and SpaceX will continue, these projects will continue, and the commercialization and advancement of human efforts in space will continue. So in the big picture, it's almost assumed that something like this is going to happen, even though in the micro picture, it's horrible.
Right, and Pascal Lee in California, are you also kind of focused on the big picture? Are you optimistic about SpaceX's goal?
Yeah, I would echo everything David just said. The short term is horrible and really bad news. The long term is, I still have an optimistic view of what SpaceX and all its partners are able to achieve. The short term is really bad news because we have to realize that every time you lose a rocket and a satellite on it, you're not just, losing a piece of hardware at the moment. It's years of work behind that, especially behind the satellite, that essentially goes up in smoke in that moment. And so there's a real human impact, not just the financial one of losing the hardware, but the human impact of losing several years worth of work when an event like this takes place. But again, you know, the measure of your character is how you get back up from a setback like this. And so SpaceX has proven time and time again that, you know, after failures, it comes back stronger than before. And I think we will see a new satellite and, you know, a new launch pad and a new rocket rise from these ashes.
Well, I certainly hope that comes true. Well, for more of that conversation, including what Lee and Grinspoon think of the discovery of a new planet orbiting the star nearest to our sun, check out the full show on voanews.com/#VOA. You can also see it on my Facebook profile, Michael.Lippin. Jim, back to you.
Michael, thank you so much. And Michael Lippin, Andrew Palchevsky, taking #VOA to where no TV program has gone before.
That's right.
Had to get a little Star Trek plug in there. Thanks so much, Michael. You're listening to International Edition. This is VOA.
Democracy in action. That's what the U.S. presidential election is all about. Who's going to be the new president of the United States come November 8th? Tune in to VOA's coverage of the 2016 presidential election. Reports, expert analysis, and more. Professional, up-to-the-minute coverage that can't be found anywhere else. Right here on VOA.
For more on the stories you've heard on our radio programs, visit our website at voanews.com. That's where you'll find in-depth reports, related stories, videos, and more from our team of correspondents. Or take the news with you by downloading podcasts of your favorite VOA program. That's at voanews.com.
voanews.com.
Online news for a changing world.
This is VOA's International Edition. Flume is the latest disc jockey to find success in producing music hits. International Edition's Sarah Williams joins VOA's Border Crossings host Larry London to talk about his albums.
If you were to say the name Harley Stretton, most people around the world would say who?
Yeah.
But when you say Flume, the typical response is, oh, yes, the electronic dance music DJ producer who is on the charts right now in the top 20. With his latest hit and a song that has become his very first platinum hit called Never Be Like You. That's who Flume is, and he's currently on tour promoting his second album, Skin. He was just here in Washington over the weekend, two sold-out shows at the 930 Club, and I even interviewed him for Border Crossings.
So who is this guy?
Well, he's an up-and-coming electronic music producer. Right now in the music world, that seems to be the current trend. At least here in the United States, it's been around for the last few years, with groups like Skrillex and Diplo and Jack U. And then there's the more established names like Calvin Harris and David Guetta. But Flume is a new star on the rise. He's very popular in Australia, where he's from. In fact, he won the Australian Recording Industry Association Award for Best Artist of the Year and Best Producer of the Year. And he was nominated for a handful of them. And his new song is quite popular. It features a young, up-and-coming Canadian singers. If we don't have enough Canadian
enough
singers
Canadians,
already.
Yeah.
Her name is Kai, or at least that's what she goes by. So let's listen to Flume and Kai and the new song, which is out right now. And I hope you enjoy this single.
What I would do to take away this fear of being loved, allegiance to the pain. Now I'm messed up and I'm missing you.
We've talked about this before, but a lot of DJs, you know, like you mentioned, Calvin Harris, are getting involved in recording now.
Everybody, you know, it's electronica. That's what's going on. All of the EDM dance music producers are creating music, and Flume is the latest in the list of many that have come out in the last couple of years. When he was on Border Crossings, which you will be hearing in the near future on the show, he talks about why EDM is so popular, and at least he reflects on why he thinks it's popular in the United States. It's been around for a long time throughout Europe. DJ Sammy had a hit back in the early 90s called Heaven. There have been a lot of DJs, club DJs. Make a lot of money. Calvin Harris, top Forbes list for DJs this year, $63 million he made it a year.
Not bad.
No, not a bad day's work. And so Flume is on the rise right now. And as I say, this song is platinum with Kai, who is the newest Canadian artist on the scene. Her real name is Alicia De Gasperis, And she chose the name Kai. She said it's Japanese for change. And that's kind of what she wants to reflect. But the single is called Never Be Like You. He's just recorded a new song with Tove Lo, who's a Swedish singer who's also is on the rise right now. And he's done remixes of artists like Adele and Lorde and Sam Smith. And his music is quite popular. In the club world, he's very, very popular. And on the charts, he's just starting to make his mark and on the rise right now for the album Skin.
All right. Thanks very much, Larry. That's VOA's Border Crossing host, Larry London. I'm only human, can't you see? I made a mistake. Please just look me in my face. Tell me everything's okay.
You've been listening to International Edition. You can find us at our website, voanews.com, any time of the day or night. Also online, stop by our Facebook page at VOA Now, and be sure to follow us on Twitter at VOA_IE. Our director is Tracy Carter, engineer Dan Crafton. I'm Jim Stevenson. We're in Washington. Thank you so much for spending part of your day with us, and we hope you have a great one ahead. Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
The recent suicide bombing in Aden, which was claimed by Daesh, highlights the violence that continues to rage in Yemen. In September 2014, a small minority from the north of Yemen, the Houthis, allied with former President Ali Abdullah Saleh, took the capital of Sana'a by force. This action forced members of the Republic of Yemen government, including President Abed Rabo Mansour Hadi, into exile in Saudi Arabia and prompted the government's request for a Saudi-led coalition to begin a series of military strikes to drive back the Houthi-Saleh alliance. In the absence of a political solution between the parties, Daesh and al-Qaeda in the Arabian Peninsula have taken advantage of the instability in Yemen. Secretary of State John Kerry recently met in Jeddah with officials from Saudi Arabia and several other Gulf countries, as well as UN Special Envoy Ismail Old Sheikh Ahmed. Mr. Kerry announced U.S. support for a renewed UN-led approach to negotiations between the warring parties, with both the security and political track simultaneously working to provide a comprehensive settlement, an agreement whose details would be finalized by the parties themselves in negotiations, but whose broad outline would include the following.
The swift formation of a new national unity government with power shared among the parties, the withdrawal of forces from Sana'a and other key areas, the transfer of all heavy weapons, including ballistic missiles and launchers, from the Houthis and forces allied with them to a third party.
The new approach, he said, would require the new unity government to respect the security and integrity of international borders and would prohibit the deployment of weapons from Yemeni territory that threatened international waterways or the security of Yemen's neighbors. Mr. Kerry expressed gratitude to Saudi Arabia and others who joined in supporting the new framework and called on all sides to be supportive. The restoration of stability to Yemen is vital in order to ease the suffering and to prevent groups like al-Qaeda and Daesh from taking further advantage of the political and security vacuum that has been created, said Secretary Kerry. It is essential for Yemen, for countries in the region, and for the world community to agree on a plan to end the fighting and achieve a lasting peace.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.